This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Hal Qualrosser spent a long time as an antitrust lawyer before becoming counsel to the Los Angeles County School District. He went on to write and consult about education policy, and he found that by thinking about his previous jobs together, it really helped him in his new vocation. He used his skills as an antitrust lawyer to analyze education as an industry and then make it understandable to lay audiences. He quickly saw that some school districts in this country outperform others for reasons that weren't readily obvious. Hal wanted to know why, so he visited 40 of these outstanding districts and documented their success. His new book is called Renewal, Remaking America's Schools for the 21st Century. Two of those super successful school districts are here in North Carolina, and we'll talk about them today and tomorrow on The State of Things. Today we're going to focus on the Statesville-Iredell County School District. Hal Qualrosser, welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Tell us about these 40 schools. First of all, what distinguished them? They outperformed in what ways?
Well, they all, or most of them, outperformed in terms of traditional student achievement test scores. But many of them were distinctive for other reasons. And other districts were selected because they'd in fact won major awards, which is what happened in the case of Iredell-Statesville. They won the Baldrige Award in 2008. Certainly, Iredell-Statesville qualified for a variety of reasons, one of which is it sort of isn't distinct. It's, you know, right there at the junction of Interstate 40 and Interstate 77 in the middle of North Carolina. It's not particularly rich. It's not particularly white. If wonderful things could happen in Iredell-Statesville, then they could happen anywhere. So it was clearly a great place to go poke around and find out what they'd done, why they'd done it, and how they'd done it.
Well, let's find out. What'd you find?
I found a fabulous school district. And the fact that it was a fabulous school district raises a whole bunch of interesting issues. Let me give you a few, and we can pick and choose among them. One is that ever since Governor Hunt was the governor of North Carolina, the state has really done a bunch of very proactive, thoughtful things to try to improve education throughout the state. And they have had some effect. But what's so interesting is that as much as those statewide measures have to some extent moved the needle, it is the change in the culture of an individual school district and an individual set of schools that really moves the needle. Which brings me to the point of the book. One of the things that profoundly interested me was, how did it happen? How do we get some districts that are better and some that are not so good? Mm. And you quickly reach the conclusion that although No Child Left Behind was intended to kind of promote and push change, after 10 years, I think we can conclude you can't outsource change to Washington. Mm. And as I said, even though Governor Hunt and his successors have tried very hard to improve things across North Carolina, I think the verdict would have to be that it's also very hard to really promote substantial, significant change from Raleigh.
Well, and what happened in Statesville-Iredell, I think, was fascinating when you talk about that local culture, that change that took place. That story is fascinating, and I'd like you to tell it and tell us how change occurred in that particular school district.
The school district was not in crisis, but it was at best a middle-of-the-road, middling school district when it went out and hired a fellow named Terry Holliday to be the new superintendent. And Terry is an extraordinary fellow. And his vision was to take Iredell from its middling status to being just an extraordinary district. And that wasn't merely an aspirational wish. In Holliday's case, he had a very structured strategy centered around turning the district into a total quality management district. Total quality management isn't just a phrase. It's a management philosophy that was first espoused by a fellow named W. Edwards Deming, who was an American, and he was a management guru. But in the 1940s and 50s, most American corporations didn't think Deming had anything to offer them. So he went off to Japan to help General MacArthur in the reconstitution of Japanese industry. He hooked up with a small, struggling Japanese automaker named Toyota, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, as Toyota and other Japanese car companies started beating the pants off American business, suddenly Mr. Deming's philosophy got a lot more attention here at home.
So how does Terry Holliday apply any of that to a school district? What does he do?
Well, if you think about sort of the central tenets of total quality management, you immediately start to get a hint of what's different. There are lots of particulars, but one of the key parts of total quality management is the mantra, plan, do, study, act. In other words, set a goal, set benchmarks to see if you're reaching the goal, measure those benchmarks. If you're not reaching the goal based upon what the benchmarks tell you, fess up, and then do something else. Try again. Try another way to reach the goals you've set for yourselves. So if you think about the traditional school district, what I've just described to you is completely at odds with how they operate. You're setting goals. You're setting benchmarks. You're being honest about failure, and you're continually trying to innovate to do something better. This is all continuous improvement. That philosophy is so at odds with the way traditional school districts worked that you can immediately see how the application of the strategy has a profound impact. And he applied it to virtually every aspect of the school district's operation. One of the more charming things was the application of Plan, Do, Study, Act at the level of the classroom. Starting in kindergarten, students in Iredell-Statesville spend a little time on Friday afternoon with their teacher discussing what they're going to learn the next week. And they discuss how they're going to learn it. And then the following week, toward the end of the week, they do an assessment to see whether every child in the class has in fact gotten at least a minimum level of mastery of whatever they were teaching. And if any child doesn't achieve that minimum level of mastery, at the next Friday discussion, teacher again says, here's what we're going to learn next week. But then he or she says, you know, we didn't do so great last week. Perhaps we could do better. Can we talk about how we're all learning the material? And they engage in a discussion about how they learn. This is with five-year-olds, and it continues throughout their
education. So those teachers are listening to those five-year-olds saying, what could we have all done better to make it easier for some of you or all of us to have achieved our goals? And those kids say, you know, you were talking too long, or I wish I had had more pictures or something. And then they say, well, let's try that next week. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. That's right. Let me give you an example that was the sort of reigning episode at the time I was there. The kindergarten class had been learning number 1 through number 20, and evidently in the prior week's assessment, the number 13 had posed some difficulty. So one little girl sticks up her hand and says, let's paint a button on the classroom door, and as we go in and out every day, touch the button and say 13.
Wow.
Needless to say, the next
week, and this is
everybody got 1 to 20. Yes, five-year-old.
Yeah.
Everybody gets 1 to 20, 13 included. Oh. And this same process is repeated with every child who keeps a notebook of what they've learned and how they've learned it. What this does is it gives teachers an incredible insight into how all the children are learning and how every child learns. And it gives them a window as to how to improve their own instruction. It is a wonderful practice, and the kids wind up owning their own learning.
Well, and you're saying they keep a notebook, and they keep this notebook with them throughout their scholastic career, K through 12, right? Or is it?
That's right.
Yeah, so now they're looking back and saying, oh, remember when I was in kindergarten and we came up with that idea, it worked. I wonder if it'll help me with calculus.
Well, what all this is about, which leads to a much larger issue in the book, but let me get there very quickly. What we used to do in schools was we had mass production education, which was one teacher teaching from one class, one textbook, one way in one classroom. And the difficulty with that was that it was very inflexible, couldn't adapt to differences among kids, couldn't deal with kids who learned differently, couldn't deal with kids who just found it boring, although something else might have interested them. It really couldn't cope with kids who were at different levels of mastery. You know, not everybody in fifth grade necessarily is exactly at the same point of mastery of the material. And it really didn't cope with kids' social and emotional issues. So we lost lots of kids. And then in the late 80s and early 90s, kind of about the same time total quality management became a big deal, we decided we really needed to educate every child, both because they had a moral right to that education and because America needed every child to be educated in a way that they hadn't needed to be educated when you could get a good job in a manufacturing plant and earn a decent middle class living, even if you didn't have a high school degree. And so we realized the mass production education didn't work anymore for us. The problem was, did we have an alternative? Did we know how to provide differentiated instruction that would reach a lot more kids? And what places like Iredell-Statesville have done is figure out a strategy that brilliantly delivers instruction that is much more tailored to the needs and abilities of every child. And this exercise of asking them how they learn and paying attention to what they say is one element of this strategy.
I'm talking with Hal Qualwasser about his book, Renewal, Remaking America's Schools for the 21st Century. Hal's going to be back tomorrow when our conversation about education reform continues. Coming up after a short break, the music of Jamie Stewart, also known as Shushu. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.
Expecting consolation, I will become outrageous. You expect me to be outrageous.